Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, my friends, and welcome, welcome, welcome to this morning's edition of Off the Shelf on Blog Talk Radio. And today is Saturday, October the 30th, the last Saturday in October, and next Sunday on November the 7th, we have to remember to set our clocks back an hour because daylight savings time ends. But I want to welcome you and thank you for joining us and thank you for your support and let you know what a joy it is to have you, specifically you, here with us this morning. I sincerely mean that. For those who are tuning in for the first time, let me introduce myself. I'm your host, Denise Turney, and I am coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And again, I say thank you for tuning in and thank you for your support. And I encourage you not to let another day pass before you pick up a copy of Long Walk Up. Long Walk Up is a very inspirational and moving book in these challenging times, which we all experience off and on in our lives. As you read this little girl's story, who is 6 years old in East Africa, and what she goes through, and how just listening to her inner guidance, it takes years, or sometimes it does. How she reaches her destiny, and you see what resilience can accomplish and can yield. You will experience this, and you will gain these blessings and benefits as you live your own life, encouraging you to be resilient and to achieve your greatness through reading Long Walk Up. And you can get a copy of Long Walk Up today. It's a short book, and it costs you less than $7. You can pick up a copy of Long Walk Up today by visiting www.chistell.com. You can also pick up a copy of Long Walk Up at generally any bookstore, for example, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Walmart, ChrisCity.com, on and offline stores. And if you don't see it on the shelves when you go to an offline store, all you got to do is go up to the counter and ask a clerk for a copy of Long Walk Up by Denise Turney, and they can order it for you because it's carried by the largest book distributors in the world. And we are actually still waiting for our special guest, who is P. Gregory. He's the author of the book A Matter of Choice, to dial in. Was working through his publicist who reached out and asked, will we have him on the show? And, of course, delighted to support and help other authors. So we agree and say yes. But when you're not connecting directly with the author, sometimes I don't know if the publicist gets busy and forgets to tell the author, because I've had it happen once before. He might not be aware of the reminders that I've sent. So hopefully he will tune in soon. But if he doesn't, I told myself to, as always, these don't always go the way you plan them to go or the way you expect them to go. And years ago I would get, and this has nothing to do with just being a radio host, but years ago I would get very upset if something didn't go the way I had planned for it to go, or could let it ruin a day or even a couple of days. But since I've learned since then, just have something else prepared, something else to look to, and sometimes even if you don't have something else prepared in your own life, something will just pop into your head. Regardless of what you're doing, whether it's at work, working on a project and things don't go as planned, an idea might pop into your head, and it might not turn out so bad after all. So you just got to go with the flow, as they say, and I thank you for still being with us as we do that. What I was going to do today, of course, is give a few tips. I always want our listeners to come away from the show with something that they can say, I'm glad I listened to Off the Shelf because I learned something today that I didn't know before. Or I learned something that helped me land my first writing assignment, which generally through the interviews I try to ask the guests questions that will help you their answers. So you can go out, if you're an unpublished author, and become a published author yourself. I want people to be entertained through Off the Shelf and then to walk away and to be able to actually realize something that has changed and become better in their life from listening to the show. I recently found out about Twitter tweeted this. It's an online educational site, and I'm trying to pull it up right now. It's like a higher education site for people who are looking for writing jobs. And some of the jobs you can find through places like Chronicle. That's a good Chronicle.com. Some you can find through Flex Jobs for people who are not looking for a permanent job. They want to do more like contract or freelance writing. You can find information in some job sites. They might be like listed in a directory on the site, InsideHigherEd.com, GetEducated.com. But there was another one that I found, and I tweeted it. If you go to the Twitter account, Education Writers Association is www.ewa.org. You can go to those places and find jobs. Even if you are not so much interested in being like a teacher or something like that, but you might be interested in writing jobs for either online colleges and writing articles for online colleges and universities, writing in journals for higher education. There's a lot of, more than what you might imagine, a lot of areas where you can go to land writing assignments. And again, I think I've spoken about this one on Off the Shelf before, Media Bistro, that's MediaBistro. I go there generally about every day. That's another good site that lists decent paying writing jobs. I mean, writing jobs, some of them pay, $60,000 to $80,000 or more a year. Well, you can earn a living working generally for one company. There's a lot of web content jobs, and I think what I see now more are people looking for search engine optimization. If you ever hear the acronym SEO, that's what it stands for. Search engine optimization is to help a company get their websites higher in the search engines and to pull in quality leads, quality traffic. So you're not just pulling in anybody into your website. So you don't want to just get maybe a million hits a day, but you want to get maybe instead of a million, you get, I don't know, say 200,000, but those 200,000 people, 80% of them are very, very interested in the type of products that you buy and sell, as opposed to pulling in a million people where maybe only 1,000 of them are truly interested, which is what happens with television often and offline radio. Anybody could be tuning in to the shows, and so you might not be pulling in as much of your targeted audience as you want to pull in. So SEO writers, I've seen that. They want people generally who also have a strong HTML background, a lot of experience working with audio, and also web design. So you would actually be helping to design the website and create content that can pull in the visitors that are really interested in the products that the company sells. It could be if it's like a wine website, they want people who really are interested in wine and the types of wines that they sell. Or I'm trying to think of other things like collector's items. They would want somebody, you to write content, create the keywords, use them in your articles, and design the website so that you pull in that traffic and it increases the company sales. There's no way to be successful without connecting with and engaging with other people. The older I get, the more I realize that's what life is all about. It's about connecting with and engaging with other people and our Creator. I don't even know of another way to be successful without pulling it off. And we use terms and business lingo to say the same thing, like networking, creating valuable contacts. Again, you're communicating and connecting with other people. And that's the way to live a successful life. I don't think there's another way around it. You can either do it face-to-face or you can do it, over the phone. You can send out direct mail. You can do it through email, newsletters, radio, television, blah, 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 blah. But you will have to connect with other people in a positive way to get the results that you want. I haven't seen anybody ever be successful and do it differently. I'm trying to think of some other tips to give for writers. We've had many, many writers on Off the Shelf. I thought I'd wait for Pete Gregory to dial in, but I have a suspicion I was connecting with the publicist that there's a gap somewhere where the publicist perhaps got busy and didn't forward the information over to Pete Gregory. So I don't think he might not be fully aware. And I went to his website and I didn't see an email where I could email him directly. So I had to work through his publicist. Anyway, other things that writers, as we've had other authors on the show, some best-selling authors, others who have recently landed book contracts, and recently others who have recently gained a literary agent, and kudos to them and congratulations to them for their persistence. One author, Dallas Woodburn, that we had on, she said it took her, I think, a year and a half to land her literary agent. Now she's been shopping around the book to book publishers. So in this time, because this opportunity has presented itself, I would encourage writers who are tuning into today's show, and even people who are looking to start or grow a small business or a business of medium or large size, resilience is absolutely, I think, critical. I think now, as I say this, when I speak about the business side of it, I think of Colonel Sanders as Kentucky Fried Chicken. When I heard his story, he knew that that type of a restaurant would be successful. He had an idea for it. It was something that he loved to do. He enjoyed cooking. He also enjoyed the business aspect of operating a restaurant. But his first, I think, five attempts, they just went belly up. And he filed bankruptcy five times. And that is absolutely amazing to just think of that. We generally just jump to a person's success, and we assume that their road there was easier than ours, that our road is just so much tougher and with so much more challenge and struggle. And then you really get into the heart of another person's life story, and I don't even think it ever is fully captured, even in a thick autobiography or a thick biography. How do you ever capture a life in a book? The book would just go, wouldn't be enough paper to fill it up with anybody's complete life story, unless it's somebody who just didn't do anything but sit on the sofa all day. But Colonel Sanders, that's encouraging sometimes when you hear about, and this man never gave up, and he knew that it would work, and that sixth try. And now look, he's an international company. And I think about the man who started Wendy's, and when McDonald's got started, a lot of times these people don't exactly see that it's going to become that huge, but they don't give up. J.K. Rowling, who wrote Harry Potter, she went through a really difficult time in her life before that. I mean, a very, very, very difficult time in her life. She became clinically depressed, which is pretty severe. And that went on, I think, for a couple of years. She got professional help, and then the idea for Harry Potter came to her, and they didn't even think that book would sell, I don't think, over 6,000 copies, if that. It was either 600 or 6,000, the publisher didn't think it would sell more than that, and it took off. But if during that dark period in her life, if she had just thrown her hands up, she wouldn't have known that success. Same with Colonel Sanders, same with so many other people that reach those hard, hard places in life. And I think that's what makes the difference in a lot of our lives. Do you just say, well, I'm going to maintain, I'm not going to go after my dreams anymore because it's just too much of a struggle, so I'm going to maintain and just make sure I can pay my bills and whatnot and just be grateful for that? Or do you say, no, I'm going all out. I'm going to drop the pedal. And that's how I'm living my life. I am going to realize my dreams, and I'm going to push through these struggles and these midnight hours, and I'm going to get there. That, I mean, I didn't say this to swing back there, but that's what happens to the little girl Mulligan in Long Walk Up. And for readers to read the story and connect it, I think that's what happens. With good entertainment, sometimes you don't think about your own life at all, but the subconscious is chewing on it. So that's a good thing with good story. Constantly, the reader is not aware of any connections between what's happening in the story and their own life. They're just caught up in the entertainment of reading about another person's life experience. But the subconscious is chewing on those similarities, which can be very, very helpful, be very, very helpful to help you get through something, and you don't even realize that that book helps me more than that it helped you as much as it did. Sometimes we are aware of it when we're reading stories, particularly nonfiction books, but I think with great entertainment, you just get so absorbed in the story that you don't make the connection between some actual experience you're having and what the character is going through, but your subconscious is chewing on it. So you gain benefits, immeasurable benefits, from reading great, great literature. And, of course, I didn't sit down and write Long Walk Up with that intent in mind. It was to entertain and to follow some the inner guidance that I had received about creating the book. But people who read it tell me they come away with that, that look how this little girl, someone in a situation where you would imagine, first of all, a lot of readers say they feel a sense of anger and unfairness that this little girl is going through these great struggles. But you look over your own life and you look through history, you look through things that are going on like right now in Darfur with the genocide and other tragedies that humans have heaped upon ourselves, because somehow we haven't figured out. It's through connecting and loving each other. It works in business. It works in every area of life. That's when life is good. And if you want to see yourself separate from other people somehow, and that we're not one whole cohesive thing that was created, you want to see it as segments and parts and feel like, you know, I don't feel this, so I'll kick your teeth out, and then that'll help me release some pressure and I'll feel better. You can feel that way, but we're all connected. And that kick you give to somebody else, you just kicked yourself. You just don't even realize it yet, but you just kicked yourself. So what we do to other people, because we're all connected, that's the very thing that you're doing to yourself. You may not be consciously aware of it, but that is what is happening. So in Long Walk Up, a lot of people think the character, why is it so hard for her? But that does happen. We some of it happens because of pain other people, painful things other people do to us, because they feel like if I hurt you, it'll make me feel better, because they don't realize that we're all connected and they think that they're separate from us. Could be separate due to gender, could be separate due to race, could be separate due to age, whatever. They feel like I'm not a part of you, but we all are. So I've never seen a person rise through hurting each other. I've never seen it happen to a family where people constantly are backbiting and deliberately doing things to harm each other because they think if I destroy you, it'll help my career. If I get people not to want to buy your CDs, my CDs will sell more. You can have that mindset, but I've not seen people where that leads to long-term success. It might for a little while, but I've not seen it lead to long-term success. It's connecting with and supporting and doing things to other people that you want to see happen to you. Because what we put out, it does come back. So in Long Walk Up, even in when people think, well, that little girl Mulligan, she's only 6 years old, why does it have to be so hard for her? If people might think that as they continue to read this story, and she does go through great, great, tremendous, tremendous struggle. Even the editor who read the book told me, wow, could you lighten this up a little bit? But there are people and children in their everyday lives who go through that struggle. And if you live long enough, and I would say at least 50 years old, and for a lot of people younger than that, and some people who've had painful, painful childhoods will be aware, although she doesn't go through anything like a child abuse or anything. But when you think about that, everybody eventually generally comes to a fork in the road or a midnight hour in their life, and some of us have more than one. It could be the passing of a loved one or several loved ones close together, something totally unexpected coming out and it's like side swiping you, catching you completely off guard and unprepared to deal with it. And then you go through like a slump or get something that could turn into one of those midnight hour experiences. Do you just say, well, I'm going to stay here and try to get as comfortable as I can in this hole, which some of us do, or do you say, I'm going to just keep sliding down and see where the bottom is, or which some of us do, or do you say, I'm coming out of this, and I don't care how much energy it's going to take and how much effort on my part, I'm going to find a way out of. If one thing doesn't work, I'll try another thing. You could try goal setting, and you say, well, that didn't work for me. I'm going to try meditating. Well, that didn't completely work for me. It's not just taking too long, because I'm told meditating does work because it quiets the mind. Then you could say, I'm going to do positive affirmations. Well, that didn't work. I'm going to keep doing that and meditating, and I'll go for a deep body massage, and I'll exercise my chakras, and I'll read positive books, and I will make sure I spend good quality time with friends and family and people who I love and care for me, and I'm going to read the scriptures, and I'm going to pray. And all together, as you get it all together, working all together, you might look back a couple of years like Mulliken does and say, and I came out, and I am on the other side of that mountain. So don't, whether you're going after your writing career, business, going through a personal situation in your life, I strongly encourage you to be resilient, continue to try different things, and sometimes you might not completely put one thing down, but just say, you know what, this by itself isn't achieving the results I want, so I'm going to continue to do this, but I'm also going to do something else too. And it might be a combination of 10 things a day that'll get you through, you know, and then things that you do every day for the rest of your life. Because every day has things in it that we prefer and things that we don't prefer. So that's a good way to stay balanced. And Mulliken, as a little girl, of course, she doesn't know all this, but she has the very thing that caused her to feel abandoned and broken, which was her mother. When her mother passed away, became a guide for her from the other side. So all was truly not lost. And she just refused to quit. And a lot of times when we're young, we have that. And we can have it forever. I'm down, I'm struggling, but I am not going to quit. If it takes me 5 years to get on the other side of this, then 5 years it'll be. But I'm coming out. I'm coming out on the other side of it. And she continues in many years. It takes Mulliken 20 years to get all the way through that. And then she goes out of this one major struggle into her destiny. And she has, of course, triumphs and successes along the way, because we have to stay encouraged. And you celebrate those successes and triumphs along the way. And then she goes into her destiny and then goes into even another huge struggle, because that's just the way it is. But she now has the tools and the insight, and she knows more about what's going on, and she knows how to stay the course, and she has truly at this point become a leader, a champion, a woman who will go down in history. She's become like a Harriet Tubman or Joan of Arc. Harriet Tubman didn't start out the Harriet Tubman that we know and admire. She was scared when she first took off. She listened to our Creator, and she reached out for help. And after many, many treks through the Underground Railroad, she became that staunch leader, that heroine. But she didn't start out that way. I think we look at people's lives, and sometimes we kind of shortchange ourselves, whether we're looking at characters in the Bible or whatever we're doing. I think we look at people's lives, and we just focus on that end result. The crossing of the Red Sea, but how long did it take Moses to get up the courage to even step his foot into the water? How long did it take? How much work went on inside of him just to take that first step? And they say about it took about 40 years. So we look at people's lives and we think, whoa, you know, this should happen in a day, or this should happen in a week, or you know, if you bury a loved one, I should be over this in a month. You can keep going, but it might take you years to completely heal from it. And the thing is to not quit, to not say, well, I'll just sit here and, you know, and maintain, but to say, no, I'm going all out. I'm going for my destiny. I am going for my dreams. I'm not going to stop. I don't care whatever. I'm putting that pedal on the floor, and I'm going to do whatever it takes. If one thing's not working, I'm willing to try and shift and be open to new ideas and try something else, because I'm going to get there. I kind of see life like driving a car. If you start out from Canada and you want to get to Miami, Florida, you know you're not going to get there in 5 minutes. So there's no sense in being upset if you're not there in 5 minutes. That's a good distance. Where are you inside yourself now, as opposed to where it is you want to be? If it's a long way off, it might not happen overnight. But if you keep moving, you'll start to see signs that, you know, I never saw that tree before. You'll have new experiences. You know, I never met those kind of people before. You'll start hearing different conversations. People are very positive. Everybody's very positive around here, and you are moving forward. That's why you're having those different experiences. You're getting closer to your dream. You get closer to your goal. So keep going, and once you achieve and reach that goal, another one will pop up. And that's just the way life goes, and you just keep moving forward and enjoy every step of the way. Mulliken, of course, with her struggles, she doesn't get to do all so much enjoyment. As a kid, she doesn't know that. It's just she's got to survive, and something within her, particularly her mother's guidance, this allows her to live a life where she thinks, I'll just maintain, I'll just hang on. She's got something in her driving her. I heard Yolanda Adams sing a song. She said, if something keeps telling you, don't let this dream go, don't let this dream die, then don't do it. And you just keep going forward. 20, 30, 40 years, whoever knows how long it might take. Say Abraham, from the time he was told he'd be a father of nations, I'm told that was what I heard, about 21 years. Moses, you know, before he even went to Pharaoh, that was 40 years. I don't know how long it took before he even saw the promised land. He didn't get in before he even saw it. That could have been a freaking 70, 80 years. And then I don't know David, from the time he was told he was king to the time he became king, I'm told that was 17 years. And that was hard for him. So just keep going. You just got to keep going. And if something keeps telling you, like Yolanda Adams saying, keep this dream alive, you got to keep going. And I'm definitely not going to lie and tell you it's going to be easy or it's going to feel easy. Maybe the greater your destiny, the more struggle you might perhaps experience. So you just keep going, and you get that. When you reach your destiny, you will probably, as Harriet Tubman did, and Moses and Abraham and David, and I could just list Martin Luther King Jr., you just go on and on and on. You will bless so many people, you will never know the number, because you didn't quit. And that's what happens with Mulliken and Long Walk Up. Just one little girl, if you look at her at her start, you would say, how in the world could she impact that many people? She's a six-year-old little girl. She doesn't have a voting right. She doesn't – what can she do? She doesn't even have a job. And a lot of people could look at that. But there was something planted in her, and she went after it, that at the end result, this woman had impacted millions and billions of people's lives simply because she didn't quit. And then she kept if this one turn didn't work, then she took another turn. Don't stay in a situation where you see, if you're a writer, you're with a literary agent or a publisher, and you see that they're not either supporting you, or you're not getting any type of marketing support. I know publishers have pulled back on the type of support they've given writers over the years, but I truly believe this. if a publisher really believes in your book, they're going to do something to try to help to move it forward. So when publishers say, well, this is just the way it is now, when people really believe in something, they'll get behind it. So if you say, well, I'm just not getting, like, zilch support, so I'm going to go, then you might want to look at getting another literary agent or another publisher. Or some people try to handle self-publishing and then promote the work themselves. So be willing to try different things. Your main thing is to get to your destiny, but be willing to try different routes. Again, like driving a car, sometimes you say, I'm going to go straight down I-95, and I'm going to get to Miami, Florida. Well, okay, it's construction, and they tell you, you got to get off this road. Or there's an accident, and they tell you, you got to get off this road. Or there's a detour for some reason, you got to get off this road. And now you don't know those back roads. Now you're feeling lost. Now you're feeling discouraged, and now you're feeling afraid. Do you give up your dream? Do you say, I don't want to go to Miami, Florida anymore? Or do you say, I've got to find another way to get there, but I'm going to get there? And so that's what Mulliken does, and that's what I encourage you to do. And in the start of the story, it says, you know, it's a childhood journey from tragedy to triumph, and we all are on a journey. I love this African proverbs, which is on the front of Long Walk Up. I read this years ago, and I try to put it some type of an empowering quote or saying in each of the books that I've written, which are Portia, my first, and then Portia, Long Walk Up, Spiral. Portia, Spiral, Long Walk, Love Has Many Faces, which is sold out, and Long Walk Up, and then I'm working on Love Pour Over Me. But in this one, when I saw this African proverb, it jumped out at me, and it says, however long the night, the dawn will break. And that's generally what I was just talking to you about, whether it's going after your writing career, a business. One business, like with Colonel Sanders, it might not work, but if you don't give up on the whole dream, then you say, well, that didn't work, but I've got to try something else because I'm not going to stop. And you just eventually a door will seemingly magically open. And Yaba Blay, who was a Temple University here in Philadelphia, a graduate student at the Department of African American Studies. She's actually from the motherland of Africa. She read Long Walk Up, and her comment on the book is, Long Walk Up breathes life into the resiliency of the African spirit. Through Tierney, Mulliken easily leaves the pages and enters our hearts. You too will be encouraged to take the Long Walk Up. And Dr. Maxine Thompson of Butterfly Press, she's a writer, editor, and a literary agent. She says, Mulliken, child of Africa, orphaned without mother, father, and left without siblings, triumphs over the rocky terrain of her solo journey. Long Walk Up is a poignant story of survival. And Ron Cavanaugh, who is the owner of Mosaic Books, and also they have a literary magazine, and He got nonprofit status several years ago. He puts on events, and I just love what he does. Him and the owner of his name escapes me, of AALBC.com, African American Literature Book Club. He has a full time job. I'm not sure if Ron does, or if Ron is completely dedicated to the literary field. But I mean, high quality caliber work that they do. And about Long Walk Up, Ron says, starting with her first book, Portia, and continuing with her latest effort, Long Walk Up, Denise Turney's literary expressiveness and dedication to the written world is evident. Long Walk Up is sure to be a bestseller. And then the scripture at the bottom of the book is, anyone who trusts in him will never be put to shame. And that's from Romans chapter 10, verse 11. I'm trying to a little bit about Long Walk Up. It is a work of fiction, and I recently did a radio interview, and somebody asked me, and actually the last guest that we had here on the Off the Shelf asked me if it was nonfiction. I told him no, it's a work of fiction, but I did, as I do with every book that I write, I did a lot of research. Oh my goodness, and I think about the research I did with Spiral. Wow, the oh my goodness. Just tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of research. having the book reviewed by a newspaper in Africa, and then also having people from the mainland or who have visited there or lived there read the book, although it's not, I don't get real deep into the culture there. It's Mulliken's story. It's Mulliken's story, and you can be from any part of the world, any gender, any age, any race, any cultural background, and appreciate Mulliken's story because it's about a story about the human condition, and all it takes is to be human to be able to connect with and engage with the story. You don't have to be a certain race or age to relate to the story. It's about the human condition, and it's a young girl's story, and you can actually you can journey with her as you read through the book. And again, your subconscious will probably be chewing and noodling comparisons in your own life, which the story could help you when you go through challenging times unconsciously, where you're not even consciously aware that it's having an impact. The same happens when we read scriptures every day. They go down into the storehouse or the subconscious mind, and we're not even aware when we go through tough times or a situation that they are helping us subconsciously because we did do those daily readings, and the same of reading literature that is positive and has a good impact. At the start of the story, things are really not going well for the community. Some people use the word tribe, but of late I've heard the word community be used in a place of the word tribe. But I do let the reader know that how strong this community that Mulliken is from, and that they once were and that they are now, because they have not stopped as a whole. This community has not stopped through the hardest of situations. They move when they need to move. So, again, as I said, sometimes you have to change and be open to new ideas. Or perhaps one thing won't work, so it's going to take 10 things you have to do to have it work. If you're trying to promote your books, perhaps just working social medias alone won't work. You might also have to hit the road and do book events and do radio interviews and perhaps put out a newsletter and do a couple other things, and all together it will work. For some people, it is just one thing that works. In some, it's a multitude of things that are all working together that will get you there. So at the start of the story, as I touched on the history of this great community and the people that Mulliken is from. So it's not a thing where it's just tragedy as we hear stories of that take place in Africa. There's a rich history there and mighty people who through it all, even now, refuse to quit. Refuse through it all. Refuse to give up. And yes, giants come out of those situations. Leaders come out of those situations, and mighty people come out of those situations. Because you got a whole community of people that, no matter how hard it gets, quit is the thing they refuse to do. And so, I'm on here on page 6 in chapter 1, section 1 of Long Walk Up, and I just have to repeat that proverb again from that African proverb: however long the night, if you don't quit. Well, actually, the dawn's going to break whether you quit or don't quit. But if you quit, you're just going to be where you were when the midnight struck. If you don't quit when dawn hits, you'll be on top of that mountain. So however long the night, the dawn will break. And so here, not at the very start of the story, but it's malaria that struck this time, the community. It flames from the fire jumped and swayed the way the woman did during Mexico. A wonderful, wonderful time of celebration. And I just included that on my own. But flames from the fire jumped and swayed the way the woman did during Mexico, Ethiopia's two-day festival that had been celebrated for more than 1,600 years. Mexico was a day that was filled with exploding colors, music, laughter, mouth-watering food, and yellow daisies bunched together, then burned in commemoration of the discovery of the crucifix, the cross upon which Christ was crucified, a discovery whose root remained inscribed in the book of Tefut, T-E-F-U-T. That's actually factual. In the plain, spittle and polluted river water with feces and urine floating across its top frequently served as a replacement for mother's milk. Too malnourished to produce food for her newborn, it was all many a mother had to offer her child. Mothers whose breasts produced milk were given alpha status. Babies took turns at their full sagging breasts that were reminiscent of large coconut being passed around in a noonday meal. Alpha mothers were given first choice to sit beneath the drab shade of the achaia trees. They were first to walk, their feeble knees struggling to carry their scrawny frame into the muddy river. They were first to drink from and bathe their children in the same polluted water, its flow ebbing toward the Gihon and southern Nile. No one knew that mosquito larvae, which became the insect that injected them with malaria, with a single bite incubated in the river. Community members stooped in the cool water and hid their shoulders beneath the surface from the scorching sun. The fiery red star that stood amid more than 100 billion other stars as the largest object in the galaxy, a star that seemed to point its rays directly at Gowati, sending temperatures soaring beyond 120 degrees. Days later, malaria swept through the region as if carried on the end of a broom. It took with it mothers, fathers, siblings, friends, and the ability to see a way out of the death hole that spanned 30 miles. Here in Gowati, no smoke swirled out of rooftops. Stone center coffee was absent from doorways. Except for the occasional flames moving away from burning meat, nothing in the sky hinted at life. Five long huts made of bundled grass, sticks, and mud sheltered the community from heavy rains. This is the community that Molokin is from, for off-the-shelf listeners. Yet temperatures soaring and rain forsaking the area, adults and children lived both day and night beneath the acacia trees sprawled about the plain. They had lived beneath the shade of the trees for several months since the rain stopped falling. And this is the beginning. This is the situation. But it wasn't always this way. It wasn't always this way. And this is the hint, the event that happens that gives a hint to Mulliken. She picks up on it. She is, she's in tune with what's going on inside herself and what she sees going on in the universe and the space around her. And it starts last night, and I'm skipping over several paragraphs now from where I started to this point. Last night, several hours after Mulliken's mother died, and I almost don't want to use that word because I don't think that we ever die, but we do take off our bodies in transition. But last night, several hours after Mulliken's mother, and I'll say transition, pygmy kingfishers, small, brightly colored birds Mulliken's mother used to leave insects and crumbs of food for, sang from the top of acacia trees. And these are real trees, and it's spelled A-C-A-C-I-A in Africa. They have lots and lots of them. Before daybreak threatened to lighten the sky, the pygmy kingfishers flew out of the tree. With each flap of their wings, the birds took higher elevation until soon they were gone from the plain. Pygmy kingfishers are birds that I don't even think they have them in the United States, but they are in Africa, and they are beautiful birds, and oh, when they sing, woo, beautiful, beautiful songs they sing. Let me stop interrupting the reading of the story, but this beautiful birds, oh, my goodness, their song is just unforgettable. So let me continue. The weather was balmy, the moon white. It was as if the heavens were thanking the community for letting them take Mulliken's mother back into the sky, far above the trees, the moon, the stars, everything the community could see. Yards away from the tree, the pygmy kingfishers once perched in, mosquitoes circled the mound of dirt where Mulliken's mother's body lay. A sizable distance away from the dirt mound, Mulliken, her eyes heavy with sleep, her mind burning with loss, saw an apparition. The vision was so clear and potent, it was as if Mulliken's spirit draped her petite body with fatigue, the way a surgeon stood a patient's body with anesthesia, just so it could operate. Dark went across the sky. Mulliken's limbs were heavier than they had been hours ago. Her chest rose and fell in a slow, methodic rhythm. It was then her spirit showed her what she could never see with the eyes still in her head. The eyes her mother told her were sweet brown. The head her siblings laughed about and pointed at and pronounced, "Sana Kubra." Her mother stood at her side. Not a hint of malaria shadowed her. She was strong. She whispered, "Marlokin, you are a triumphant teacher. You will lead a nation." Then, like death itself, the bitter fixation that took her mother away from her, the vision was gone. During the barrier early in the day, the men in the plane, their painted bodies long and thin like the sticks they carried, moved the dirt over Molokin's mother's body, filling the hole they dug hours before. The hole Molokin's mother's body now lay at the bottom of. As the fire-hot rays drenched Molokin's skin from the sun, it seemed to be pointing right at her. The dance, sway, and singing of the women who stood so close to her, she felt her skin pushing into hers while her mother's body was being buried. It all drained Molokin. She drifted into deeper sleep with ease. The further fatigue carried her into sleep's portal, the tighter disbelief grabbed at the vision. "A dream, a dream," Molokin told herself while she moved away from spirit talk, the flutter of her eyelids flowing. When the sun shone in the sky and the vision seemed to make believe, Molokin shook off sleep and called out, "Mother!" Sadness covered her like a heavy blanket. "Mother!" she called. All that came back to her was a sound of dirt blowing across the earth. She lay in the fetal position. She was 6 years old. Her life filled with so much pain, she forgot how to cry. But that's what she felt like doing. Then I, as I mentioned before, I went briefly into when Molokin, her family and the people in the community, very close-knit community, almost like if you're part of the community, almost I'm you and you're me. I'll look out for you because I have to look out for me. We're one. So when Molokin's people arrived at the plane in Gowati, Ethiopia, Africa's oldest independent country, all of the adults bore a deep tribal marking at the center of their forehead, a marking made with the searing edge of a sharp knife. When they first arrived at the plane, the grass was green. You know how different times in your life, when you first get a job, when you first publish your book, when you first said, "I'm going to start my new company," in the first couple of days it was started, all everything's so green when you first got married. But how you gonna hold out when you get to a fork in the road or things start to come upon a mountain or midnight, that your end may be determined by how you react then. So when they first arrived at the plain, the grass and leaves on the trees were full. The land, though flat for miles except for one steep lone hill, danced with acacia trees. Yellow daisies, purple dilatos, and pink orchards, gorgeous, gorgeous, since the men were herdsmen, cattle, camel and sheep huddled at the edges of the plain. Occasionally, a few chickens clucked their way into the area. Within hours of arriving to the plain, the men erected the grass stick and mud huts, with the women filled with hand-carved cooking utensils and floor mats for sleeping. Can you see the contrast? The river was clean. It gurgled wide, moved over the rocks decorating its bed. Wildly, it was Abyssinian long-clawed pygmy kingfishers and yellow-throated two-liters flew across the sky. The sound of their loud beckoning calls echoed throughout the area. At that time in the plain, a thing called malaria, a disease that globally claims one child every 30 seconds, did not exist. Babies laughed and cooed. Men came over the hill with deer, hen, and a rare buffalo hosted on their strong shoulders. They carried enough food for the community to feast on for days. All the mothers thus gifted their children with milk. Then, suddenly, the rainfall ceased. Temperatures escalated. Water muddied and flies and mosquitoes swarmed the river and trees. Dead ancestors coming back to settle the score, women said, blaming the brutal weather change and angry ancestral spirits caused forth by meanness crafted in the hearts of a few unforgiving men in their community, men who struck their wives and children until they bled, men who kept their brows furrowed and tight. As if spooked by the mosquitoes, the cattle, camel, and sheep moved in herds across the plain. The last time Molokin saw the animals, they were ascending the steep hill that seemed to go on forever. And the birds our off-the-shelf listeners, as we come down to the last few minutes of the show, I'll tell you, the show goes by so fast. The birds and this hill, as if you look at your own life, there's probably something in your life that just keeps grabbing your attention. I don't know how long it might have been grabbing your attention. It could be something around you, but something just keeps grabbing your attention. It could be a book on a shelf. There's maybe something in that book. It could be, I don't know what it is, but I think in each of our lives, and sometimes we just ignore it till it no longer, you never hear anything trying to grab your attention and speak to your spirit anymore. But there's a time, I think, in all our lives that something just keeps grabbing your attention, just keeps grabbing it. For Mulliken, it was the pygmy kingfishers, which her mother loved those birds, off-the-shelf listeners, and his hill. Now, the hill didn't, she didn't know it was his hill until all this happened. When everything was just so wonderful, she didn't notice this hill. She didn't notice the birds because her mother loved the birds. But after her mother is buried and after things start to really shift, And situations can shift, and you got to know, you got to move. You got to move. You got to change. Something's got to change. You worked at a job for 10 years. It was wonderful when you got there. You get laid off. What do? Do you stay in a depressed state, or do you change? Because in life, you got to keep moving. And the situation, they do change. They don't stay forever the same. So the contrast in the story, you can see how wonderful it used to be when you first get married, how wonderful when the baby's first born. Now you got to raise this child. And then you come to some middle place. So it's just spooked by the mosquitoes. Two things are calling them all. Can remember, the cattle, camel, and sheep moved in herds across the plain. And this is when she has a second thing that begins to call her. First is just the birds, now it's something else. The last time Mulliken saw the animals, they were ascending this steep hill that seemed to go on forever. And I asked you, what's calling your attention? What is calling your attention? And Mulliken, I'm talking to you specifically, off-the-shelf listener. What is calling your attention? So Mulliken stood gape-eyed and watched the animals go over the hill. She wanted to go with them, even now, away from the people who sat beneath the acacia trees. Mulliken stood at the edge of the plain, staring at the hill. What are you doing? Piccola, dreams of his father fading, his brown eyes dreary, his body yelping for food that could not be found, called out to her. Moving beyond his four wives, he leaned forward and examined the Mulliken. She upset his peace. Yesterday, when her mother died, he expected her to fall into another mother's arms and weep. She didn't. He watched her. She didn't cry once. This morning she smiled and played with the other children. It was as if she didn't know her father died 9 months earlier, crumbling in a bar to return from honey, his liver and kidney surrendering to a heat stroke, or that her mother died just the previous afternoon. Mulliken wasn't like her mother, a woman who had been inconsolable for days after her husband's death. The day her husband died, Mulliken's mother refused comfort. 3 weeks later, two of Mulliken's brothers were mauled by hungry male lions. It was then Bicola instructed the people to gather their belongings and prepare to move. Grass was being eaten up by the sun. It hadn't rained in 3 weeks. Having seen this cycle of lack, Bicola knew waiting to see what would come of the land would ensure doom. The community covered 10 miles before they located an area populated with lush trees, the place where they are now. They remained a month until swarms of mosquitoes They remained a month until swarms of mosquitoes chased them out. Before they left, Mulliken's mother, melancholy beginning to attach to her with each departing kin, buried her remaining sons and two eldest daughters after malaria snatched them from her, taking them one by one back to the earth. The woman searched for roots in the underbrush, but nothing but death took the fever away from Mulliken's four siblings. 2 weeks later, the community settled in the plain where yesterday Mulliken stood next to a bare-breasted woman, her head brushing her knees while she watched her mother's body go back to the earth. Bicola wondered what would come of Mulliken. He regarded her as if she were a book that, if he studied her enough, would bring him wisdom. He made note of her conversation, ill-timed laughter, and body language. He measured her responses to life events against those of the other children. How we compare ourselves to others, or we compare other people to others. The way she dealt with the loss of her family intrigued, frightened him. He began to think there was something sinister about her. It was as if she welcomed suffering, played and laughed with it, made it one of her invisible playmates. What are you doing over here by yourself? Just as Mulligan went to turn, Piccolo was upon her. She felt the heat in his body holding against her back. What are you doing over here? Mulligan knew she could be punished, sharp blows coming down upon her shoulders like heavy logs if she didn't turn and face him. Yet she kept her back to him, watching the hill. He followed her pointing finger and laughed. Silly girl, he said. Then he turned and walked away from her. She didn't move except to lower her arm. Come on, he demanded. She stood with her back to him. He responded by rushing to her side and grabbing her arm. She grimaced while his long, dirty fingernails dug like thick, sharp pins into her skin. She didn't move. With a hard shove, he freed himself from her and stormed across the plain. He neared a group of women and laughed at them for not watching after Mulligan, for not training her to be a good woman. Feeling the sting of embarrassment his harsh words brought them, residue of spit that had flown out of his mouth while he shouted at them, yet on their faces, two of the women stood and neared Mulligan. Once at a time, he slapped her face several times, hard. Then grabbing her arms and squeezing them so she could not gain freedom, they dragged her back to the tree where they had previously rested. The following morning, 2 days after her mother's burial, a strong wind that blew against the tumbled tree leaves brought Mulligan courage. It woke her with its shrill whistling. No one else stirred. Mulligan was right on her feet while she hurried across the plain, her gaze fixed on the hill. The sound of impending rain covered her footsteps. She knew the community would awaken soon, morning rustling them away from the serenity of sleep. Cooler temperatures and the hint of rain would decorate their faces with smiles. They might not look for her straight away. She almost sang while she ran down the hill. And she's on her start. And she has struggles ahead of her as chapter 2 begins. And I'm not going to read much of it. Desire and intrigue were not the best advisors, Mulligan discovered 4 days later. So she's on her way, but she now knows she's got a great distance to go. I do want to read this little part. She has another dream where her mother is standing there, and she's decorated in a long, flowing black and red dress. She's standing next to Mulligan, and in her hand was a spear, topping him with sharp. It glistens as if hungry for prey. Amazon warrior, Mulligan whispered. Her breath went out with a flutter. She heard the stories her mother told him, the stories of African women who could not be defeated. And I'm skipping a paragraph. The woman pushed Mulligan's hands away and stepped back. Her heels dug into the earth with her body refusing to be touched. You are a mighty warrior. Her mother is helping her. And when she, from here, she runs, Mulligan runs into a market where she's going to meet somebody who's going to help her. And she's going to get some help, for good help. And she hears people's voices, so many voices. She appeared alone except for the hurrying feet and the rainbow voices, so many voices. How far along in school is the youngest one? She's growing so fast. I know, like a vine. Up. Special. Come and take advantage of these many specials we have on all kinds of fruit and vegetables. You'll be glad you did. Don't go home without some of these delicious foods. Mulligan peered up. Her thoughts were on the energy in the rainbow voices. Her eyes widened. It was so close. A market. It brimmed with people, some fat, some thin, none starving. And that's just the very beginning of Long Walk Up. And again, I encourage you to go out and get a copy of it. I truly believe it bless you. Less than $7, and you can get it at www.chistell.com, or you can get it at bookstores online or offline. If you want a special autographed copy, just shoot me a note when you, and it's through PayPal. Just shoot a note, and I will autograph a copy with a special note that you might want me to include. You never pay for shipping and handling, and you never pay taxes. So it's less than $7, and there'll be no additional charge that you would pay for the book to get Long Walk Up again through www.chistell.com. It's a short book. You can sit down and read it in one day. And I encourage you to get yourself that treat and that blessing to experience Mulliken's story. And we're coming down to the last seconds. I want to thank you so much for being here with us on Off the Shelf. Hopefully we can reschedule the author, Pete Gregory, the author of A Matter of a Choice, and I encourage you to support him. He's actually online at www.sensualsjourn, sensualsjourn.com. Again, Pete Gregory, A Matter of Choice. We'll try to have him on again. I think some gap happened. So now another reminder to the publicist just the other day, but maybe that the publicist was busy and didn't get the info over to Pete Gregory. So we'd love to have him back. And I definitely would love to have you back. I love you. I appreciate you. I'm grateful for you. I'm thankful your support. This is why I love writing. Well, I love to write just because I love to write. And I love this radio show because of you. You're the reason I love doing this. And you're the reason I will be back next Saturday at 11 o'clock because of you. And I hope you'll be here as we bring other authors, continue to bring people in the book industry that can help you, even if you're not a writer, in other ways. And you can also learn how writers create their stories and the upcoming events they'll be at. And you can dial in and speak to the authors and ask them questions one-on-one here at Off the Shelf on Saturday mornings, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Do come back. You just bring me so much joy to connect with and be with you. And remember, remember, this is the truth, you are so incredibly valued. You'll never know how much. You're truly blessed and you're truly loved. Go out and create an excellent day for yourself. Thank you again for your support. Bye for now.